Hello and welcome. This is the All About Symbian Insight podcast number 215. We are recording on the 8th of June, 2012. I'm David Gilson in Kingston upon Hull, and with me in Sussex is...
Rafe Blanford. Hello, everybody. Good to be here.
And just back from Reading City Centre, we've got Steve Litchfield.
You make it sound really glamorous, David. No, we thought we'd let David chair this one. It seems like Rafe and I may well end up doing quite a bit of talking, so David's the one linking us smoothly. I have to say, I'm sitting here sobbing rather gently. There's no sign of the Nokia 808 in the UK at the moment, and I'm seeing people receive theirs gratefully all around the world and going...
there, Steve. I'm sure the 808 POV will be with us very soon. We're waiting for a review device from Nokia. But as Steve says, it is starting to ship in a few countries around the world now. So you're going to start to see plenty of sample photos appearing. But rest assured, we will have our own coverage starting as soon as possible.
And on that subject, we will dive straight into the news. And we will go on to the 808 availability map, which I think you posted, Steve, didn't you?
Yes, this is something Nokia's put up. And there seems to be a few holes. For example... it's an interactive map, so you click on it and on the appropriate content. You then get a list of individual countries coming up. However, and if I actually click through it so I can try it live on air, if you click on Europe, there's no sign of the UK, boo hiss, which Rafe can explain in a moment. And if you can't actually click on the whole of North or South America at all, which, given that we know the 808 is definitely coming to some South American and North American countries. That seems rather strange. Rafe, is this just a work in progress?
Yes, it's kind of a work in progress. I mean, this map's actually linking to the individual Nokia sites in the specific countries and where there are plans, and I think it's probably related to operator arranging to make the device available, you know, or where there's been, you know, something official set up. That's where it's linking through to, because it's kind of, if you like, all set up, ready for doing the support. It doesn't mean it's not coming to a certain country or it's going to be available in a country linked to straight away. Some of those will have to wait into July, maybe later in the summer. You're quite right about South America, for example. Chris Webber, who's the president of Nokia in the US, has said they're going to find a way to have the 808 available in the US, but that is most certainly going to be SIM-free rather than with any operator. And certainly it's starting to look that way for the UK as well at the moment. I don't think any operator is going to range it, or if they do, it will be some kind of special offer through one of the, you know, specific retailers. Maybe Carphone Warehouse or Phones For You will choose to do something. But I've been told that the 808 will be widely available SIM-free all over the world. I mean, that means you'll have to go maybe to, you know, a specialist retailer or an online retailer to buy it SIM-free, and that fewer countries will be getting it, you know, through an operator, which means in some cases you might be able to get a device subsidy. It's not altogether unusual or unexpected, this. I mean, we, I think, would be the first to say the 808 is something of a niche device, and those of you who remember the N86 and the N82, for example, you know, arriving at the height of Symbian's powers, really, even those didn't get ranged by operators in every country. You know, I know, for example, the N82 I had, that came SIM-free because it wasn't readily available for a UK operator.
Yeah, it does seem somewhat unfortunate and almost crazy that the operators aren't going to carry such a brilliant phone, but we understand that Symbian is slowly going away, although I think an opportunity could be made of this for actually photographic shops that normally just sell point-and-shoot cameras and SLRs could actually stock these cameras and basically sell it as, well, look, here's a great digital camera that happens to have a phone and a web browser in it as well.
Yeah, that's a fair point, David. I mean, bear in mind, for something like camera shops, you'd have to set up a whole new supply and logistics chain. So it's not, you know, that easy to do, especially when this is, I wouldn't say a one-off device, but it is a niche device. And obviously the PureView technology is going to be used in the future. So if you're an operator looking at your roadmaps, you're saying, you know, do I want to take this device when I know there may be something coming down the road, which I'll be able to sell in the same way I is a sort of camera-centric device. One has to face reality in Western Europe. You know, Symbian is getting towards an endpoint. For those who want to buy it, it is still going to be available. So I would stress that. You know, the personal part of me goes, yes, it's absolutely crazy. You want to arrange it. It really is an amazing technical achievement, an amazing device. But I can also see the business side of it where, you know, people buy a smartphone for other reasons than just the camera. And, you know, operators in particular are going to be thinking about it from a more generic point of view. You know, what does the average customer want? And I'll be honest and say the 808 is probably not the phone for an average customer.
Yes, well, we'll move on now. Google have acquired QuickOffice, which is something of an end of an era, because anyone who has used a Symbian device for a number of years will at some point have come across QuickOffice, either pre-installed or having bought the upgrades. I myself have used it quite a few times, trying to be an effective road warrior, trying to get a few things edited on a Symbian device, which is easier said than done. But Google have acquired it, so it's something of an end of an era, isn't it, Rafe?
Yes, I think that's an inevitable part of the kind of technology process. You know, as things develop, as ecosystems build and fall, you will see acquisitions come and go. But it does feel like we're heading towards an era where it is about really big groupings on either side. And obviously there's the things like Android, then iOS and Apple, and then Microsoft and Nokia. You know, I think RIM would like to be included as a fourth member in that, and there's probably various others who would make a claim as well. But it does feel like it's coming down to those three big giants. And you know, QuickOffice is just one more step along that road. I'm sure there'll be more acquisitions to come. I mean, looking back, we've had something like Instagram, for example, by Facebook. And Facebook's kind of a fourth party. Is that going to ally with one of them? No, I think it will remain generic. And then, of course, there's something like Amazon. So it's not just a question of, you know, simply dividing it into three teams. But yes, as I say, I think this process of consolidation will continue. It's an inevitable part of the ecosystem, and actually it's quite healthy. You know, that's what happens with startups in the technology world. You know, they do something interesting and innovative, and QuickOffice may have been around a bit longer than some that have been acquired, but that's what happens.
Well, one technology company that has never picked a side is Opera, and it's our favorite bandwidth saving mobile browser. Opera Mini has been updated, and it's quite a significant update to version 7, and Steve has got the story.
Yes, Opera Mini is being constantly updated, as you say. Version 7.0, 29974, if you're counting, is the support. Previous version was 6.5, so it is a major version release. Basically, Opera has taken on board what many other software companies have taken on board and web services over the last year or two, and basically integrated social networks. So in addition to getting your Twitter and Facebook feeds on your toaster, your fridge, and your washing up bowl, you can now get Twitter and Facebook updates in Opera Mini. So right on the front page of Opera Mini now, you give trust it with your social network login details, and you can see updates actually streamed into your front homepage. So you've got, for example, speed dials, you've got the featured links, you've got your own favorite sites based on the sites you visit, and you've got your social network updates all in line, followed by the Opera News. So effectively, you can log in to go into Opera Mini, and providing it's got all your details, you see everything that's relevant to you all in one stream, which is a really nice idea. But I have to say, it's just a tiny bit OTT. Someone who's already got his Twitter and Facebook details in so many different services, applications, and systems, to have yet one more place to see these same updates and to give it my authorization just seems a tiny bit too much. Any comments, Rafe?
Well, the only thing I'd say is Opera Mini have done a great job over the years of choosing the right things to do. And I suspect this is less aimed at smartphone users, and Opera Mini is really, of course, about feature phone users, where Twitter and Facebook will be less well baked into those systems than we're used to on smartphones. And so it does kind of make sense to me as a move. And, you know, it's kind of where you expect to see it. It's part of your web experience almost now, social networks. So kudos to Opera for doing that. But as David said, you know, they have remained largely platform agnostic. You know, they've always tried to release on everything. But even a company like Opera, you know, there's rumors around it being acquired by, you know, a company like Facebook, for example. I've always been somewhat surprised Opera has survived as an independent as long as it did. I mean, at one point there was speculation it might be acquired by Nokia, for example, for its browser technology back when it was sort of producing the best native browser for Symbian devices. And actually, arguably, it still is the best native browser for Symbian devices. Opera is one of the first things I install on any Nokia Symbian device, for example.
Yeah, also mentioned that a version 7.0 update, support for an unlimited amount of speed dials. So rather than just having a page of favorites, you can have as many as you want in Opera Mini. Also, a whole detailed long change log I won't bore you with, but it does include performance optimization. The phrase we always like to see, because it means the end application will be faster. And I have to say, despite me being a tiny bit jaded in terms of yet another Opera Mini update, it's still the browser I go to when I'm out and about, and I get Edge if I'm lucky, GPRS if I'm not lucky, out in the country somewhere in the UK. What do I turn to? I turn to Opera Mini because it's the only browser that will get me real-world pages nice and fast. So a vote of confidence for me there.
And Opera Mini isn't the only application update on Symbian. I mean, for a dying platform, we've got a lot of big name applications appearing at the moment. Steve, you've been covering these this week.
Indeed. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's go to Vimeo.
Okay, Vimeo is effectively, if you haven't heard of it, it's a sort of more highbrow, slightly more serious version of YouTube. It's been around for roughly the same length of time. And so rather than having skateboarding cats and fun things that teenagers upload in their bedrooms, you tend to get semi-commercial videos and professionally produced stuff, much higher quality video in terms of the content, not the actual physical picture quality, and more serious subjects. And just looking down here, for example, it's in the main categories in the Vimeo, you get activism and non-profits, church, citizen journalism, environment, humanitarian, and then it goes down into animation, 3D animation, After Effects, computer animation, dance, exhibitions, graphic design, none of which are topics you really tend to see on YouTube very much. So it's a very, very different feel. But the main thing is they've now got an official Vimeo client and it works rather well. I know Rafe had a few issues with it. Maybe you can clarify that in a moment. But for me, on my N8, it installed first time, worked first time, and all the videos played perfectly in proper 360p, just right for the NHD screens of the Symbian smartphone. So yes, if you've any inkling at all about that you'd like to try a slightly more serious form of video journalism and featured videos, almost like a sort of a catch-up TV style, then do have a look at this Vimeo in the Nokia store, and it's free. Go grab it.
Yeah, right. I mean, when I downloaded this, I was having a few connectivity issues. It wouldn't actually load the videos, but I tried it out later, and it worked perfectly. And as Steve says, it's kind of the grown-up version of YouTube. I kind of hesitate to use that phrase, but it does feel like the average content quality is much higher. You know, there's kind of curation of what goes on there. And so as a way of getting content on your device that's interesting to, view and listen to, I think the Vimeo app is certainly one that will appeal to a lot of people who want to kind of avoid all the rubbish you can sometimes find on YouTube.
And next along, Evernote fans will be happy, won't they, Steve?
Yes, NoteKeeper is an Evernote client that I installed, I think, version 1.1 about 2 or 3 months ago, and it was, I had a few issues that I didn't really understand the principle. Most client applications for web services, you basically you either have a system whereby you read the content on the web service almost as if through a window and you suck down just the bits you want, or you have a full sync system whereby the entire database of notes and content on the web is synchronized to your local copy on the client. So it's usually one or the other. NoteKeeper has a hybrid approach whereby it recognizes that in Evernote, which is, this is all based on Evernote.com, Evernote is now so rich in terms of the amount of content it adds. It's not just text. Evernote now has images and video and picture and got me in. Sorry, Ray. Evernote is now so rich in terms of the variety of multimedia content that you can embed in notes. There's no way you'd want all of that synced down using up your bandwidth and your memory space on your phone through a client. So there's basically a very clever system whereby certain content gets synced, others doesn't get synced. If you create something on your phone, it gets synced up to the cloud, obviously, but not everything you create in the cloud gets synced down with its full content down to the phone. And I didn't perhaps appreciate that in the first version. It wasn't obvious. I still think there are a couple of things in NoteKeeper 1.3 that aren't obvious in terms of the way you have your local favorite notes, and you also have what's called offline notebooks, and the two kind of, to me, seem to duplicate each other's functionality. But it's much more solid, much clearer what's going on. Performance is really rather good, and it's just great having the whole of my Evernote database on my phone, or any of my phones, really, whichever platform I pick up now. Symbian can now play amongst that list of platforms. So really highly recommend it. It's a couple of quid. Go grab it, definitely.
And staying on the cloud theme, we have a new application for SkyDrive, which is Microsoft's cloud storage service. However, it isn't an official application. It's been written by a third-party developer. So, Steve, does it suffer for having been written independently?
Yes, it suffers from being a version one, effectively. It's a nice idea. I guess this is almost akin to the NoteKeeper 1.1 I was talking about, and that has matured incredibly well over the last 2 or 3 months. If SkyFiles matures to the same degree, then we're in for a treat in terms of access to SkyDrive. At the moment, you can browse all the files and folders, and you can download stuff, which it may be all many people need. Having said that, you can't upload at the moment, and also it doesn't remember your login details. Every time you go in the app, you have to enter your Windows Live ID and your password all over again, which to me just spanks of something which is version one. It's proof of concept. Hey, it works. Go and grab it for free. And once he's got some feedback, the developer will then push the version 1 or 1.1 or a version 2, and everything will be fixed. It will remember your logins, and there'll be much greater interactivity. So whether there are actually many people out there running Symbian who are also big SkyDrive fans, that's another matter, of course. But if you do need to, or perhaps you're transitioning to Windows Phone, then yeah, this may well come in very handy.
That's what I was thinking. I think this goes under a similar category to, say, for example, screenshot applications. It's a perfect application for reviewers who are on lots of different devices, but for ordinary users on the street, I'm not sure how many people this would be catering to.
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, we will move on now. Steve has written a massive opus of a review on All About Symbian for the Bell Feature Pack 1 update, specifically on the Nokia 701, which is another, just like the 808, hasn't been carried very well in the UK, so you have to get it through alternate means. But Steve, could you take us through what you found and what you like and what were the low points?
Yes, that's right. We should mention this is also applicable to the Nokia 700, the 701's smaller sister and probably less capable sister, which was ranged in the UK. But there's certainly 701, which is quite hard to find over here. I had to trade mine in, and Rafe had to buy his in from Italy, I think. So it's certainly worth looking out for. Probably the top Symbian device until the 808. Arrives arguably, if you're not too bothered with the camera. The big things for me in Bell Feature Pack 1, which is now well and truly out and rolled out to most of these devices running these systems, the 700 and 701 and also the 603 around the world, clock speed increase. This applies just to 700 and 701, 1.3 gigahertz now. It used to be 1 gigahertz, but a 30% speed increase. That's pretty significant. Having said that, although it's significant for, you know, rendering web pages, even running games, for example, much shorter loading times on levels and games, in actual fact, because Symbian's so well optimized around a slower processor, an awful lot of things in Symbian with the multitasking and the RAM management actually happen pretty nippily anyway, so you don't actually notice the difference. But when you do need it, for example, rendering a big web page, then it does make a difference. So great to have this speed increase on board. And I don't think it actually decreases the battery capacity in terms of the life you get on a charge, because things happen quicker, the screen's on for a shorter time in order to complete the task. So rather paradoxically, you speed the processor up, but you don't actually lose any battery life. Also, they fixed the flash video bug, which has been plaguing just about all of us, I think, for the last 6 months. So you can now go onto a really heavy duty, for example, a video website that uses flash video embeds, and you can tap on them and play them, even high bitrate videos, in the browser without any problems at all. And of course, if you've got local FLV files of high bitrate, they'll also play well as well. So big thumbs up there. I just wish they'd roll that same patch into these vanilla Bell builds via a patch. Loads of new widgets, David. You may want to glance at the screenshots of this. Rather nice, large mechanical clock, complete with little animated cogs moving around. I dare say that does drain some battery life, but it looks nice. Images, I like this. It's, rather than just asking you for your favorite images, like they do on, for example, Android, and you'd have to tap on the one you want and choose the one, and it comes up. It actually provides a random selection of the 6 of your latest captured photos, I think, I'm guessing, from the last week or two, or maybe from the last dozen or so. So you always get a slightly different selection. So every time you go onto that home screen, there's a slightly different layout of thumbnails. And, oh, that was a good photo, wasn't it? And it prompts you to tap on it and enjoy the photo all over again. So thumbs up there. The music player widget is now available smaller, so you can fit that on a screen with more other widgets. And there are a load of toggles, offline, play via radio, 3G, NFC, and there are 4 or 5 others as well. So most of the things you can do in settings in terms of turning things on or off are now available via toggles as widgets on the home screen. So big thumbs up there as well. Multitasking UI, there's slight difference in the multitasking carousel, whoopee-doo, but it does look nicer, and it does show the full screenshots this time, so I'm not going to complain there. The pull-down notifications, slightly different. You now get a separation of incoming messages and other status updates, just to make it a bit clearer that you still don't get email notifications, which is the big downside, and that's the thing that Nokia really need to work on, given that they're responsible for Nokia messaging and Nokia email, and they're also responsible for the OS. There's no reason whatsoever why they can't integrate them properly like every other mobile manufacturer. Mobile data tracker, this is a nice one. You can, like as on recent Android phones, it keeps track of the amount of mobile data you're using, and you can set a cap, and then it will show you a warning, or it will cut data off after that cap, and it does automatic resets. So every month on the day you specify, it zeroes the counters in line with your own billing. So really, really nice there as well. Final couple of things. The browser is now version 8.2. It's a big jump from version 7.4 on Vanilla Bell. Better support for HTML5. Better performance all round. You can start scrolling around pages now before all the images load much more easily. So, and there's a slight tweak in the UI in terms of where you'll find things like your most visited sites in your history, but you'll soon work your way around it. Dolby Digital Plus, yeah, whoopee-do. a few omissions. Profiles are a bit deprecated. If you now press the power button and feature pack 1 on the 701, you don't get a full list of profiles as you have for every other S60 and Symbian phone for the last 10 years. That's now been changed and simplified, I guess, for new users, but it's a bit of a shame, really. As a hardcore Symbian user, I'm so used to using all those profiles, and now you have to kind of dig down into the profiles widget or the appropriate setting to make them work. And yeah, I did have a few issues with video streaming, which is, I think, is a long-standing bug in Nokia Bell, that there are problems with video streaming over Wi-Fi for some people on some routers. And it's just very annoying that I'm one of the people affected. Otherwise, I'd be going, well, it's no big deal, but it is a big deal for me. So any of that really strike you, David? Anything really leap out at you as something you must have?
Well, the 701 is a device that I like in general. I was looking at what you're saying about the widgets. I really like the idea of what they've done with the photo widgets in terms of just bringing some limited intelligence into it and just reducing the amount of work that you have to do as a user. With what you were saying about profiles, I think there is a sense in general that they are trying to reduce the amount of fiddling that you have to do. I was disappointed to see that there wasn't an alternative calendar widget brought in, because I was disappointed that in Nokia Bell it only showed one appointment at a time. And not only have they not improved the calendar widget, but your reviewer said that they've also removed the week view from the calendar app, which is awful. The bookmarks widgets is great. There was actually a third-party application.
Yeah,
that would do that, so replace the need for that. But I was just going to ask you two questions, actually. First of all, do you think with all the widgets that are there now, do you think that there is too much fiddling to do? And also, can you tell us what we can expect for older Symbian devices like the N8 and E7?
I'll answer the second one first. We are all expecting now what's apparently officially called Bell Refresh, which will include elements of what I've just mentioned, mainly things like the new browser and the new widgets, and they will be heading to current Symbian 3/Anna/ Bell devices. It remains to be seen the timing. I'm guessing probably a month or so for that. Watch this space, obviously. The second, too much fiddling? No, I think compared to the amount of fiddling you can do on other platforms like Android, then the Symbian Bell is a nice compromise. There are just enough widgets to make it interesting, just enough home screens to make it interesting to set up, and not so much that it overwhelms people. I mean, on Android, some of the Android 4 devices, you've now got 150 widgets, which is just a tiny bit too much. this is around 30 or so with Bell Feature Pack 1. Oh, Rafe, any comments on all of this?
Yes, the thing that struck me most, Steve, was the performance improvements, and that's, as you say, from the processor bump. It's not just about the processor, though. I mean, it also is some software optimizations underneath to make things as efficient as possible. And what kind of strikes me here is usually we associate software updates with making devices going slow, and that's certainly true elsewhere in the smartphone world, or, you know, it can't quite manage all the functionality. So, you know, the Symbian updates, if we go back right to sort of Symbian 3, you know, through Anna, Bell, and now Bell Feature Pack 1, have all improved the speed, the performance of these devices. So I think, you know, real credit to the software development teams there. And as a result, Symbian for me has never felt faster than it has on Bell Feature Pack 1. The other thing I just wanted to bring into the discussion, we've had quite a few people ask, you know, what happened to Symbian Kala, and the reality is Symbian Bell Feature Pack 1 is Kala, just as Symbian Bell Feature Pack 2 will be Donna, and those Kala and Donna names were code names internally, just as Anna and Bell were. And rather unusually, Anna and Bell actually got used in the kind of the public release information. But of course, when Nokia rebranded from Symbian Bell to Nokia Bell, at that point they also decided they weren't going to sort of continue that name. And it kind of makes sense if you think about it. You know, Bell was the big change, and the subsequent updates are going to be more iterative rather than sort of revolutionary in terms of the update to the UI. I mean, the Bell update in UI terms was probably the biggest change to the look of the Symbian UI since it was going all the way back to the very early days, I'd say, even bigger in some ways than the update to go from touch from S63rd edition to 5th edition. But Bell Feature Pack 1 is really a very polished experience. Now, it doesn't solve some of the issues that Symbian has, and, you know, people who are used to other platforms are going to still look down on it and say it's not good enough. But I think for anyone who likes Symbian, who, you know, and is familiar with it, they will find Bell Feature Pack 1 a really polished experience. And there are going to be a few niggles. I'd agree with Steve on the profile thing. For example, I liked having access to them from the power button, but if I'm honest, I probably only used silent, you know, most of the time, and it was the others were kind of special use cases. So I can understand why that simplification happened. So in one sense, I'm really happy to see Bell Feature Pack 1 because it really does display Symbian in its very best light in terms of, you know, things like power efficiency, the overall performance. I would describe it as the sort of phone-centric nature of Symbian or the communication-centric nature of Symbian. You know, whereas some of the other platforms, you know, apps start coming in a lot more. And of course, as I say, everyone will find bits that they don't like. But overall, I was really impressed with the Bell Feature Pack 1. And I've been using it now on the 701 for a couple of months. And I think it's going to make the 808 really stand out. And it'll be interesting to see people picking up the 808 who haven't looked at Symbian, you know, maybe for a year and haven't realized all these software updates have gone on. And I think they may be in for a pleasant surprise.
It does just all beg the question of what might have been had they got this done maybe a year or 18 months earlier.
Of course it does. Although I keep saying this to people, it wasn't really about the now, it was about the next. And yes, it would have been great if they could have delivered this earlier. But the problem wasn't really around Symbian as it stood then. I mean, yes, there were the functional things and things like that, but it's about how do you develop the next generation of devices. And I think it's fair to say that the kind of the requirements and the ethos around which Symbian were built have kind of moved on a little bit, or the industry has moved on. And that's why I think, you know, Android and iOS have done so well. You know, their requirements, what they were built around, is a more accurate reflection of what the majority of the people in the market seem to want. And more than that, it's the underlying stuff. You know, Symbian was based around requirements of relatively restrictive power, processor and memory. And that had implications on the way the architecture was designed, particularly when it comes to putting it onto new hardware. So one of the reasons we haven't seen, say, dual-core Symbian devices or extra memory upgrades or, you know, developments in hardware happening as quickly as we have on the other platforms, because it's quite hard to port Symbian to, you know, new hardware. There's the first reason for that. I won't get into it now. But as a result, I feel that developing the next generation of Symbian devices would have taken an awful lot of effort. And it's not that, you know, Symbian's bad. It's that the architecture is based around, you know, something from almost a different era. And so moving it on to multi-core devices and some of the other requirements would come along and the functionality, I mean, that's effectively where a lot of the Nokia decision came from. Could it have been different? Yes, they could have gone for it. But I think that's going to be a what might have been and a what if scenario. It's probably better not to dwell on it too much, although I'm sure we're going to talk about it in future podcasts.
Yes, we are, because we keep talking about that. We're going to have a podcast just on what might have been and what Nokia did wrong and right. And I think this is a perfect way to lead into that for another time. So we'll leave that there just now. Just before I wrap up, we are running a little bit long, but I know we wanted to mention our S40 brethren. Nokia have released a bunch of new S40 Asha devices, which are touchscreen only, aren't they, Riff?
They are. I just wanted to give a quick mention to these, because I wanted to kind of put a question out there to our audience. And that's really specifically looking at the Asha 311, which introduces Asha Touch as a UI. It's kind of a new UI for Series 40 that's full touchscreen, i.e. there's no keypad or keyboard to go along with it. And they've brought in a lot of things that will be familiar to Symbian users and also to N9 users, MeeGo devices, like a pull-down notification bar and actually a swipe action from moving across home screen to app launcher and then to a favorite application. And there's things on the lock screen as well. A lot of, you know, kind of UI cues and design cues that you can recognize from other Nokia devices that kind of make Series 40 almost unrecognizable for people who think of Series 40 as running on a 128x128 screen or something like that. And, you know, Nokia themselves describe it as a smartphone-like experience. And that comes back to the problem of definitions of smartphones. But I think the interesting thing is the 311 in particular, which has Wi-Fi on board, is a pentaband 3G device. It doesn't have GPS, but it has a lot of the other sensors. It's almost a replacement for some of the lower-end Symbian devices. Now, of course, you're not getting quite the same experience, but you do start getting apps, because there's 35,000 odd apps in Nokia Store that will run on these devices. They're Java and they're web-based rather than being native-based. But not for the PowerSIM bin user. I think looking at the very lowest end devices, and I'm thinking of devices maybe like the C503, for example, there's an argument to be made that getting one of these Asher devices might be a better bet. And it obviously depends on which market you're in and all those kind of things. But as Nokia's strategy has evolved, Windows Phone can't occupy the same space that Symbian does. It just doesn't yet reach as low down in terms of pricing and also the kind of the variety of devices that you can build with it. Whereas Symbian did, and there was always this tension against Series 40, almost keeping Series 40 down. And now that's kind of disappeared. Series 40 is expanding upwards almost. That's partly inevitable as kind of the trickle-down effect as features that were once high-end become commonplace. But just an interesting thought to maybe leave people with. And I'd be interested in people's comments. You know, for those who have used a low-end Symbian device, would you be willing to replace it with one of these Asher full-touch devices? I think I would probably say I wouldn't be. It certainly is a day-to-day device. But as a secondary device, yes, given the sort of battery life requirements and all that kind of thing, it might be an interesting one to pair either with a high-end Symbian device or indeed a Windows Phone device. But I'd be interested to see if anyone has any thoughts on that, so please get in touch.
Yeah, and also, not only would you consider it, but do you know anyone in your circle of friends or family who you think it'd be better for as well?
Absolutely.
So we will wrap up there. So I've been David Gilson in the chair today, and with me in Sussex, Rafe Blanford would like to say goodbye.
Yes, I'll say goodbye as well. Thank you for listening to the All About Symbian Insight podcast.
And bye-bye from Steve.
Yes, and I have been Steve Litchfield, as opposed to the people we normally are, David. Goodbye from there.
Yes, we'll all be the same people tomorrow. If you want to get any more updates, you just visit us on allaboutsymbian.com and AAS on Twitter, and also at David Gilson, at Steve Litchfield, at Rafe Blanford on Twitter. I'll spell as they sound. And we will catch you next time. Thank you for listening.